This is WCCO's Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
Thanks so much for joining us. Our first anniversary program is underway here on Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. And the people that have hosted the program over the last year, Tom Schroyer, the regular host of the program, in studio, Susan Rowe, John Rossman, all in studio. We've got quite a group today and a lot to talk about, Tom.
We really do, Steve, and we just want to say thanks to you, Steve, for all that you do here with us every one of these programs. Your talent and professionalism are just so gratifying to be able to work with you and Dennis Matuszek as well. And really very, very pleased that we've been able to spend this year here with our listeners. John, I know you've had a great experience.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. It's an honor to be here, and really it's been an incredible experience for the past year, and look forward to doing it into the future.
And Susan, I know from talking with you that you've been getting great feedback on the show here from really all of the legal community that you interact so heavily with.
Yes, we have. We've had great feedback. It's been a great opportunity to raise a lot of wonderful issues, and I must say thank you to Steve and Dennis also, because they make it sound so easy, and yet when you're here, you realize how hard they really are working to make this sound as good as it does. So
thank you. Thank you very much. It's been a lot of fun, and I've learned a lot, and I've heard a lot of feedback from listeners as well and friends and family that they've learned a lot from the program over the past year, and that's great news.
Well, that's really great, and of course, I should introduce again Susan and John to our listeners. Not that they need a lot of introduction, but as they'll remember, Susan Rowe is a perennial top 50 super lawyer among all of the lawyers in all practice areas in Minnesota, as rated by our peers in the legal profession here in Minnesota. And John Rossman heads up Moss & Barnett's Creditors Remedies Practice Group and has a national practice representing folks in the credit and creditors remedies industry throughout the United States, as I just mentioned. And we thought today, though, Steve, we'd talk a little bit about a variety of areas and look back over the past year and take a bit of a retrospective and maybe do some window gazing, too, to see what might be ahead for the legal profession this year. But, of course, the big story was the economy and the impact of the credit meltdown last October and the collapse of the stock market and all that ensued from that. And I know, Susan, you've seen really dramatically the changes affected by that or caused by that circumstance.
You're right, Tom. The biggest change has been all the loss of jobs and what that's meant to families, to child support issues, to spousal support issues, foreclosures, and just tremendous devastation to families, and how the court system has to react to that and try and put Band-Aids on these situations for what may be 2, 3, 4 years coming forward. So we've had a busy, busy year just trying to react to the fallout from the economy.
And, John, obviously in your practice area as well.
Certainly. You know, we've seen a record number of bankruptcies being filed over the past 12 months, and certainly going forward we're expecting to see a lot more. And we've seen businesses struggling both with the ability to collect their receivables from their customers as well as struggling to get credit to make purchases to build and expand their businesses.
Yeah, and certainly in just the general litigation area where I practice, we have as well seen many, many ramifications, most notably, of course, the spike in the number of fraud cases and embezzlements. It really goes without saying, I suppose, but when something this dramatic happens, it really is quite pronounced. I'm reminded of Warren Buffett's comment that when the tide goes out, we find out who's been swimming without trunks, and we certainly see that in litigation area for sure, as we do have a tremendous a number of these kinds of cases. I'm thinking it's going to be 3 to 5 years before the mess gets cleaned up.
Well, what about the impact of the economy on the legal profession? You talked about clients in your specific areas of expertise, but what about on the legal profession? Can you comment on that and how the economy has impacted that?
Well, certainly we've seen just a tsunami of change sweeping through the legal profession. A number of prominent law firms have shuttered their doors. Many others have had really quite remarkable layoffs of lawyers and staff. predominantly on the East Coast, where they were so heavily invested in the securitization of the mortgage instruments that proved to be so difficult for and challenging for the credit markets, but as well in other parts of the country. And so what we're seeing is lots of turmoil, lots of change. John, what are you seeing?
You know, to echo your comments regarding some large law firms we've seen nationally that have not been able to survive this storm, you know, names of law firms that a year ago I wouldn't have even imagined that they wouldn't be here today. But I think above and beyond that, what we've also seen is we've seen clients who have who've been more discerning and have really really requested more of the legal services that they're receiving, and have been really well educated. Coming to us and requesting information, but have already done their own research and done their own homework and understand really where they stand.
And Susan?
Well, I think particularly in the divorce area, I would echo what John's saying, that we are seeing much more informed consumers, where folks are just not willing to pay the prices that they were paying before for a divorce, especially when they need to be saving their money. And so we're seeing much different approaches to these legal processes than we did before.
I know we had programs earlier this winter with Ben Henschel of our firm and Jim Vetter talking about precisely that issue. Now, has it impacted the number of folks, though, who have been seeking to go through the divorce process?
I think we've seen a large, large increase in the filings in family court across the state this year, and primarily that's due not to new divorces so much as it's due to post-divorce matters such as child support modification, property division modification. And we're also seeing, interestingly, more and more of those folks going through that process without a lawyer. Which puts extra demands on the court system when people come into the courtroom without a lawyer, perhaps not as prepared or knowledgeable. And so that's the major fallout we're seeing in the family court system.
Of course, next week our program will feature as our guest Chief Justice Eric Magnuson of the Minnesota Supreme Court to talk about the challenges faced by the Minnesota judiciary with respect to the budget funding crisis that's looming over at the legislature this year.
And you know, Tom, even the lease cuts that the legislature is talking about is going to make a difference to all of us in terms of the services that are available through the courts. And we've seen a lot of those cuts already in the family area this year. And it'll be interesting to hear what Chief Justice Magnuson has to see as what he sees the next layer of those cuts to be.
John, you mentioned that clients have become more discerning, more sophisticated perhaps in their buying of legal services. What are you seeing around those points?
Well, specifically, a couple of things. First of all, and somewhat to Susan's point, there are free legal resources out there that clients will go to first before seeking out a lawyer. Certainly, there are resources available through the Hennepin County Government Center, the legal access point. I volunteer there, and that's a service where a client can go and speak with a lawyer for up to 15 minutes and receive some legal advice, perhaps to represent themselves or perhaps to further hone their opinions and their case to decide whether they want to retain a lawyer. And then there are other programs available through the Hennepin County Government Center, through the Self-Help Center and other services available. So we've seen, in addition to that, also the ability of clients to go to the Internet to find information they need to have an idea of what kind of case they have before they retain the attorney.
We have more on the way. It's our first anniversary program, Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, available online at moss-barnett.com. Phone numbers on the program, as always, if you have a question or a comment, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. You can also text the studio, the number 81807. Send your text, question, or comment, 81807. We'll be back in a moment on 830-WCCO. It is Minnesota Law, our first anniversary program, and we're honored to have in studio the people that have hosted Minnesota Law throughout the course of the past year. Tom Schroer, our regular host, Susan Roden, studio, John Rossman are here, and we've talked about some of the things that have impacted the law over the past year, the downturn in the economy, but Tom, Susan, John, what about going forward? What can we expect in the future?
Well, I think there are several interesting things that we can note. First of all, the trend toward the consolidation of law firms into ever fewer and larger organizations does appear to have accelerated this year and continue. And I think that will only continue into the future. For example, according to one online survey featured by Altman and Wheel, there were 48 firms, law firms, involved in mergers during the first 3 months of 2009 alone. And these are firms ranging in size from as few as six all the way up to 250 attorneys. And so we do see that trend, I think, accelerating even as we speak. And that, of course, will mean that there will be fewer places for people to go to buy legal services, which in turn could spawn a whole different approach to the delivery of legal services for folks who have a harder time affording the large law firm style. Susan, I know you've worked on some creative approaches here to the delivery of family law services.
Well, yeah, I think especially in the area of family law, we really see a change in the business or the work of the lawyer because there just simply aren't the resources right now to go into court. And so we're seeing a lot of ADR. One opportunity that the Hennepin County Bar Association is working on is unbundled legal services on a pro bono basis for parties coming into court that need an hour of advice or 2 hours advice or assistance getting through one part of the legal process, and those services are being offered on a pro bono basis by Hennepin County Bar members to try and expedite the court's work and also to help these folks through the system. So I think we'll see more and more creative ways. The American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers is also coming in and doing moderated settlement conferences for the court, trying to settle some of the toughest cases and get those off of the court calendar and help these people get on with their lives. So lots of new challenges, but lots of new creative ways of attacking those. So I think it's an exciting time to be a lawyer and to look at some of that.
I suppose with unbundling legal services, you could really take apart a lawsuit and have a lawyer just work on really almost any number of items or just one or two small items and assist that way at much lower cost.
And I think that model is being used in a lot of different practice areas. For example, the parties would negotiate the contract and then you would just draft it for one of the parties. Or perhaps that you would go to trial but not having done the earlier work in the case. And you know that has its challenges from a legal perspective, obviously, but I think we're seeing consumers do that more and more.
John, I know you've been a bit of a pioneer in the creative delivery of legal services. What do you foresee?
Sure. You know, a couple of things. First of all, with respect to legal services and the way that the lawyers charge for them, you know, one thing we talked about a few weeks ago was property tax appeals. And with property tax appeals, Moss and Marnett is offering a program where what in some circumstances will handle those on a contingent fee. So the lawyer takes some of the risk relative to the appeal that's taken in those circumstances. Also, what we've seen on a broader basis has been situations where non-lawyers will purchase parts of a law firm so that a portion of a law firm or portion of a legal practice that is not necessarily related to the practice of law. Certainly in my industry, it's been collection law firms, large collection law firms, where some portion of the law firm is not necessarily directly engaged in the practice of law, and that portion of the practice will be acquired by a non-lawyer, and then the law firm will continue to practice with a business partner, if you will, who is not a lawyer running certain portions of the practice.
And John, do you see the Internet making inroads here in how law services are assembled and delivered?
Absolutely. You know, you look at all the incredible things that the local company here, West, and Thomson Reuters have done, certainly being a pioneer with Westlaw and going forward with a lot of the products that they're providing. And like I said earlier, clients are coming to a lawyer already having done their own research. And there's so many great resources out there. I know we were talking about FindLaw earlier, which is a great resource for information. And there's so many tools and so much information out there for consumers of legal services that I think it's got to be something that has to be factored into how we're going to practice law in the future.
There's been a fair amount of discussion about the possibility that law firms will start to outsource their backroom technician drafting kinds of tasks to even places in India for, you know, the assembly of routine documents, for example. Do you see that in the future, Susan?
I do see that in the future, and I think we're seeing that with the Internet and some of the different relationships that are set up now, and I think we're going to see more and more of that. I don't think that's going to totally replace the lawyer. I still think that's a very personal relationship. I think clients still want to see you. But there are clients, corporate clients, technology clients, that may not have the need for that one-on-one contact and may very well be satisfied with services being provided by some unknown entity in a different country. So I think there's a place for it. I don't think it's going to totally transform the practice of law, however.
We also are seeing, of course, a big move toward the use of, say, paralegals, or call them paralegals, but really it's anyone who has the appropriate education and training to be able to provide assistance to the lawyer at, of course, a greatly reduced charge. For example, there's an outfit I've heard of anyway that hires college graduates with English majors to draft contracts with a lawyer's supervision at great savings. And so it seems to me that there's going to be a lot of opportunity for folks without that JD degree, the Juris Doctor degree, to come into the legal profession and really make great contributions and have very rewarding careers.
We'll have much more on the program. It is the first anniversary of Minnesota Law. Our hosts in studio today, Tom Schroyer, Susan Rode, and John Rossman. Your comments, questions, always welcome. 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. You can text the studio as well at 81807. It is Minnesota Law each and every Saturday at noon here on News Radio 830 WCCO.
This is 830 WCCO.
Welcome back. Minnesota Law continues, presented by Moss and Barnett, available online at moss-barnett.com. I'm Steve Thompson. Dennis Matuzak is our studio coordinator on the program, and we are celebrating our first anniversary on the program. We come your way each and every Saturday at noon. Tom Schroyer, Susan Rode, John Rossman in studio. We want to go to the phones right now. By the way, the phone number on the program, you're welcome to call the program anytime with a question or a comment, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. And a couple of weeks back, we unveiled the ability to text the studio at 81807. You can text the program. 81807 is the number. All right, we bring in Pat. Pat, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello. Yes, I was wondering, who do I contact when I've had serious concerns about the service that I've been getting from an attorney that I've hired?
Well, Pat, this is Susan Rode. I think there's two ways you can go. If you're concerned just about the advice you're getting and the quality, I would suggest getting a second opinion and contacting someone else and asking them the question. If you're concerned about the attorney's competence or that the attorney has done something wrong, then you would want to contact the Lawyers Board of Professional Responsibility and file a formal complaint there. So it depends on the nature of your concern, but either way, certainly if you get a second opinion, that lawyer would also tell you if this is something that would be appropriate to take to the Lawyers Board. So I'd encourage you to do that.
Phone number on the show, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. What about marketing, competition for clients, differentiating yourself from other attorneys, other firms, etc.? As we move forward, I'm sure the Internet and all sorts of different forms of media make that challenging.
Well, indeed they do, Steve. And in fact, here recently we've been getting information from our bar associations and various other publications about how to attract clients by Twittering. And I'm still trying to figure out exactly what that means. I'm not sure how much anyone would care about how I'm spending my days, but apparently there are some lawyers who are Twittering to attract new clients. But certainly marketing and differentiation of the firm and the lawyer, that's just huge, and it has become huge, and I foresee that just getting bigger. John, what do you see ahead?
No, absolutely. You know, it's funny, when I went to law school back in the early 90s, there was no classes at my law school, which was William Mitchell, a great school, a great education, but there are no classes at that time available regarding marketing. So as a new lawyer, you come out of law school, you pass the bar exam, you don't know the first thing about bringing clients in, and it's something that you have to learn. As I understand now, there are some classes that are available through the local law schools, But back in that day, you certainly had to find yourself a good mentor or someone that could show you the ropes to bringing in clients.
But certainly we are using the internet, email, and our website much more to attract clients and to establish a presence in the community.
You absolutely have to. I think all those things are really important. You know, I think the most important marketing tool that you can use is do great legal work. Return your calls on time. Just so, you know, if you do great legal work, which I know Moss and Barnett does, that in itself is the number one marketing tool that you can have.
And return value for the fees that are being paid. Because
absolutely,
at the end of the day, of course, it's not only the outcome of the case, but the client's perception that we've delivered value that really is the differentiator.
I'm stunned by how knowledgeable my clients are about me when they come in the door now. It's like, this is your life. You know, they've been on the internet. They have researched me. They're telling me things about myself that I forgot half the time.
They've heard you on the radio.
I know.
All those sorts of things.
Yes, they have. And I'm just shocked at the research. And frankly, somewhat flattered that someone took the time to actually look up, you know, what you've written and what cases you've worked on and where you went to school. And I'm impressed by the knowledge that our clients come to us with now.
And has that been good? Has that been good to make so they become informed that they come to see you, Susan or John or Tom, and they understand your credentials and your experience?
Well, I think that has made a difference for the better. I think clients, by virtue of having access to more information and resources about attorneys and professionals or service providers in general, I think they're better informed and better consumers. And I know that in a number of cities, and I'm sure soon to follow in Minneapolis, there are informal web services, web pages that rate lawyers and allow clients, former clients, to anonymously offer comments about lawyers or doctors or any other kind of professional. And I think that's just going to accelerate and become even more important in the future.
All right, we've got a busy year, many legal developments in the past year. We started Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, last spring, and a lot has changed. There have been many, many important legal developments, Tom.
Well, there really have, and of course, one of the big ones was imposed or enacted by our legislature. This is a new law that took effect last summer and deals with real estate, and I know, Susan, this intersects with your area of the practice.
It does to some extent, and it's called the Transfer on Death Deed. And the Minnesota legislature passed a new law this year that allows folks, in fact, to transfer their property during their lifetime, but they'll hold title to it, have full control over it, but upon their death, the property would pass to a family member, a friend, or whoever. But they're allowed to direct that during their lifetime. They avoid probate on those issues. These deeds can be recorded so that they ensure that their wishes are going to be taken care of. And it's a great way to do some estate planning that is not expensive. There is no deed tax imposed on this. And I'd encourage folks to look into that if they're looking to pass their property on.
Yeah, and talking to our real estate people, they are saying that that was really quite a major change, and our estate planning people, that really has streamlined things greatly. And
Yes. And
I know, John, you've seen really quite a bit of upheaval in your area.
No, absolutely. You know, we were talking before the show about some proposed legislation before the United States Congress regarding regulation on credit card companies. And the concerns that I have regarding that are that there are certain folks in our society, certain consumers who don't have access to credit. There are certain people who are consumers who are disenfranchised, be they recently divorced, someone who might have just filed bankruptcy, or maybe someone that just came to this country. And anytime we seek to put further regulations on the credit industry, it most adversely and most seriously impacts consumers who are most disenfranchised, if you will, the folks who are at the who barely have the ability or don't have the ability to have access to credit. You know, you think about 10 years ago here in the state of Minnesota, you used to be able to go just about anywhere and write a check. And that's certainly gone away within the past 5 years. And the reason for that is there was a number of cases here in the state of Minnesota in the early 2000s which limited the ability of collection agencies and law firms to collect fees based on their ability to collect on bad checks. And as a result, merchants, as you know, convenience stores, supermarkets were simply losing their shirts on checks, especially bad checks, so they made the decision to stop accepting bad checks. You know, you have a situation where you have hardworking people who might be living paycheck to paycheck, can't write a check for, let's say, the transmission on their car breaks down, won't have the ability to write a check, may not have access to a credit card as a result of some of this new legislation. Payday lending has been severely restricted here in the state of Minnesota, and really won't have an option. You can have someone who could be one car repair away from being able to not make it to a job and potentially becoming unemployed. So I think it's very important to really be critical of these changes that are facing our Congress right now and realize that, well, yes, there is there are some changes that need to be made in the credit card industry, but at the same time, we need to realize who exactly those changes impact, and we want to make sure that we don't further disenfranchise those consumers who already have a difficult time getting access to credit and to whom credit is so important to maintaining a job or maintaining just the basic necessities of life.
And so, John, as well, I know that there were a number of changes made in foreclosure law and just the general inundation of the court system with bankruptcy filings and collection proceedings against individuals who could not afford to pay. Has that had a dramatic impact on the practice of your area of the law?
It really has. You know, the volume of foreclosure cases that we've seen have resulted in a number of changes in the Minnesota legislature, and I presume there will also be changes on the national level. As far as bankruptcy filings is concerned, you know, when the bankruptcy code was amended 3-4 years ago, the thought was that no one could file bankruptcy anymore because of this means test, because of this requirement that people had to go through credit counseling. But obviously those changes to the bankruptcy code did not stop people from having consumers from having the ability to file bankruptcy. You know, and we've also seen such a volume of cases going through the courts right now. And the courts do such an incredible job with the volume of cases that they receive. But certainly there are instances. I know there's one instance in our office where we filed a confession of judgment in one of the local counties, which a confession of judgment is where two parties agree, yes, you can enter judgment against me. There's no, it's everyone's agreeing to it. It's a stipulation. We filed that document in November, but yet we didn't get the court to act on it until February. And it's, you know, some concerns that I have is, you know, with this backlog that the courts have and with the discussion of budgets being cut even further, and I know the Chief Justice is going to speak about that next week, that this is going to put further burdens on the basic process of justice as it's administered through the court system.
I was looking back over our programming over the past year to try to look at some of the shows that seemed to highlight some of the big changes, and I know that we had David Beek on last December. David is a patent attorney with our firm, and he was talking about a case that has turned out to have just tremendous importance here for patents and issuing patents in the United States, and that was the Bilski decision, which came down last year. And basically, many commentators are saying that that case may have sounded the death knell for a very controversial kind of patent called a business method patent, which had been causing great havoc for businesses in especially the Internet arena, because basically it was possible to patent simply a way of doing business. And the Bilski case has really reversed that. And now that has been argued just this past week before the U.S. Supreme Court to determine if the U.S. Supreme Court is going to delve into this area as well. And so that's a huge change. And, of course, Marcy Frost, one of our employment lawyers at Moss & Burnett, was also here in December with you, John Rossman, to talk about the area of the Americans with Disability Act and the amendments that were enacted by Congress and signed last year by President Bush, which greatly broadened the sweep of that area.
We have more on the way. It is Minnesota Law. First anniversary of the program here on News Radio, 830 WCCO, Minnesota Law, presented by Moss & Barnett. Available online at moss-barnett.com. We have more coming up with Tom, Susan, and John. The show has gone very quickly today. You're always invited to call the program with a question or a comment, or send us a text at 81807. It is Minnesota Law here on 830 WCCO. First anniversary. Anniversary Program, Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, each and every Saturday at noon. Tom Schroyer, Susan Rowe, John Rossman in studio. We've had a lot to talk about on the program, and we want to get to Find Law's list of the top 10 legal issues on consumer minds. We won't be able to get to all of those in the time we have remaining, but John, what about Find Law? What's that all about?
Well, Find Law is another service that's offered by Minnesota company West or Thomson Reuters. And Find Law is a website that provides a host of information for consumers of legal services. It provides information regarding lawyers, and it also provides a great legal research tool. And specifically what we're looking at right now was certain topics over the past year that have been most researched on Find Law by consumers of legal services.
And there are many neat topics, fascinating topics here. One that came up before the program we should bring up right off the top, grandparents' rights.
This is an emerging issue, Steve, that has been going on for some time now, and it comes in several different formats. One is we have more and more grandparents who are becoming parents when their children have children and the grandparents end up raising those children. The second area we see is grandparents trying to have access to their grandchildren, and that happens in the context where the parents are divorced and perhaps one parent has sole custody and isn't letting the other parent's parents see the child. It also happens in the context where people may still be married, but grandparents don't have access to see the grandchildren. And in fact, there's been some legislation proposed in Minnesota this year that would give grandparents independent rights to see their grandchildren, even if there is not a divorce. And so I'm hoping we can talk about this more in the future, because it's a big issue for a lot of folks in this state and nationally and has received a lot of attention.
Don't have a will. You probably need one. Tom, this is a program we've done in the past. We'll do it again. Wills are an important topic.
We will, and we will have Cindy Ackerman back, who did a great job, and Nancy Kiskus as well from our estate planning practice at Moss and Barnett. But certainly people have lots of concerns about wills, about probate, about will contests, about competency, about elder care. A whole host of issues there. It's not surprising that it ended up as one of the top 10 searches made on the Find Law program last in 2008.
Another one, home foreclosures and renters' rights. We see this in the news time to time. People are paying their rent. They're doing what they're supposed to. Problem is the landlord isn't paying the mortgage.
Sure. From a contractual standpoint, it's the party that owns the property. In this case, it'd be the landlord that has the right or the ability to rent the property to the tenant. In the situation of foreclosures, it becomes a bit more attenuated because you have a circumstance where a lot of times the landlord isn't telling the tenant that, hey, I'm behind on the mortgage payments. The tenant continues making payments to the landlord, and lo and behold, one day the sheriff comes along and posts a note on the door saying the property is being foreclosed. So there's a whole host of areas and issues and rights that go along with that topic.
Teen rights is another one in the news right now, specifically curfew law, but the teen rights is a big picture item.
It is a big picture item, Steve, in many ways, and certainly I see that in my area of law where we have teenagers who want to decide which home they live in with divorced parents or neither home, or the parents decide they don't want the teenager living with them, which is the other situation. So a very big area right now, and certainly the school case is one of those.
You know, it's so funny, though. When my son was 18, he was saying that he had rights, and then when he became 21, he assured me that 21 was the new 18, and he was happy to take my support. So, I mean, I don't get it.
It's funny how that works, isn't it?
Indeed.
A great program today, and once again, it's been a great year here on Minnesota Law, and thanks so much, John, Susan, and Tom. It really has been a learning experience for me, and I'm sure all the listeners to the program.
We're looking forward to an outstanding lineup of programming here continuing through the next year. Starting next week, of course, with Chief Justice Eric Magnuson, who will be addressing what Minnesota courts are doing to efficiently and effectively, as well as judiciously, deliver legal services and justice throughout the state of Minnesota.
And how do I address the Chief Justice when he's in studio? Can you help me out there?
Your Honor.
Your Honor. All right. Very good. I'll keep that in mind. I don't want to do anything wrong next week, that's for sure. It's been a pleasure. Tom Schroyer, Susan Rowe, John Rossman. Always great big thanks to Jim Ingbloom for all his help on the program as well. Dennis Matuzak, Also a great job as our studio coordinator. Year number one in the books, Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Available online at moss-barnett.com. Here on News Radio 830 WCCO.